Well, brethren, it's great to see all of you here, and I trust and I know that God blessed the site, certainly in Oceanside. I could just feel a lot of love and of God's Holy Spirit present there, and a lot of acts of kindness going around. I saw a lot of it. And during this feast, oh, by the way, it was wonderful. I enjoyed, had a lot of fun with many brethren, including Ray and Verna Newby. Now, Ray forgot his ties. So, on the first day or two, I lent him a tie. And then on the eighth day of the feast, Ray knocked on my apartment door and said, I have a feast gift for you. And it was in a, bag. And after he left, I opened it and I told him I would wear this tie. So, brethren, during this Feast of Tabernacles, we heard recited, and whether it was the first time we've ever been at the Feast of Tabernacles or however many decades, something recited that we have heard and is wonderful. And this is the cluster of Old Testament prophecies that were given to us in sermons, dealing with a time when Jesus Christ would heal the eyes of the blind. In the Old Testament, there are many scriptures that prophesy of that. Now, it's very clear that all through the Gospels, there are records, which I'll mention them, of many people who were healed of physical blindness, miraculously, all during Christ's first coming, 3.5 years. And we know that that is a foretaste of a great healing of the blind, not only when people are resurrected who were blind in their physical life now, of their physical eyesight, like in the Great White Throne Judgment, but that is the real fulfillment of that is going to be when mankind will have the blindness lifted from them, and God will miraculously open the minds of the masses of humanity. That is a wonderful lesson we learn from the Feast of Tabernacles and the eighth day. So today, I would like to just mention four things about, related to this. First, I would like to repeat a few of the examples of those Old Testament prophecies that deal with the future healings of mankind's blindnesses. When the eyes of the blind shall be opened, like in Handel's Messiah, a beautiful oratorio. Second, I'd like to review Christ's healings of physical people during his first coming and his 3.5 year ministry, and then especially John 9. I'll focus on that one while mentioning the others, and then I would like to mention something that that even though the physical healings that Christ did were a foretaste of the great healings that are going to come, we, each and every one of us here, is also a foretaste, because we have had spiritual blindness removed from us. So in a sense, we are a foretaste also of that great mass healing of mankind that is coming. And then, as time permits, I went through and glean some of the letters to the readers that are in the past 2 years of Good Newses, just some of them, showing that we have the blessing, such as us in United, of being part of God's process for, of helping others have the scales lift off their eyes. And God, we have the great blessing of God allowing us to be instruments to heal their eyes of spiritual blindness, just as He did for us, because of others who were in the church before us that God used. So let's start with the first section, which is examples of Old Testament prophecies dealing with the future healings of mankind of their blindness. Of course, they're going to be healed of all things, but I'm, for the purpose of this message, just talking about the concept of healing of spiritual blindness. And as a background, as I was going through the Old Testament, something dawned on me. It's a great irony. Just before I get into those Old Testament scriptures, if we could go to Genesis chapter 3. And this is very ironic, and I never really thought about it until I was preparing the message. But 3 verses 1 through 13. Well, starting in, of course, this is Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. And actually starting in verses 4 and 5, it says, "And the serpent said to the woman, Eve, you shall not surely die, for God does know that in the day you eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened. So Satan said, I'm helping you so that your eyes will be opened. And you shall be as gods, knowing good and evil." And then in verse 6 it says, "And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof and did eat, and gave also to her husband with her, and he did eat. And the eyes of them both were opened." So Satan accurately stated, their eyes were opened. "And they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves aprons." Now, the ironic thing is, at that very instant, they became spiritually blind because they fell for Satan's very clever and powerful deception. Now, God knew. He put Adam and Eve in that garden and allowed Satan to be there. So he knew that they were going to be subject to this very powerful, clever deceiver. But God has a great purpose for humanity. And part of that process is that all of us must experience, as part of the process of salvation, being healed of spiritual blindness and repenting. And so God knew that that had to be part of our experience, each and every one of us, whatever our circumstance, whether we were not in the church, or whether our family was or was not in the church. Every one of us has to, at some time, have the spiritual blindness lifted from our eyes. And I want to refer to a sermon which I heard that occurred during the feast, and I'm glad I brought my laptop to the feast. And it was given by Mr. Chris Rowland in Wisconsin Dells this year on September 20th. And the title of the sermon is, "The Blind Shall See." Now, that was a tremendous sermon. And it's powerful, and any of you, if you have opportunity to hear it, you would really enjoy it. And the subject he dealt with in depth was the subject of why mankind has been subjected to spiritual blindness. And he said it with great passion. But preparing this message, I gleaned a few of his points, but by no means am I covering his sermon. So, brethren, with that background in mind, if we could go to Isaiah and read a few sections of Isaiah. Starting with Isaiah 29, starting with verse 9. So, Isaiah chapter 29. And first reading verses 9 through 12, where it says, and it's talking about the state of blindness in Israel specifically, but it applies to the whole world, really, when you compare other scriptures. But starting reading 9 through 10, it says, "Stay yourselves," and I'm going to read in the King James, but that one is clear in the New King James, which says, "Pause and wonder." in the New King James. So pause and wonder. Cry, they are drunken, but not with wine. They stagger, but not with strong drink. And then in verse 10 it says, "For the Lord has poured out upon you the spirit of deep sleep, and has closed your eyes. The prophets and your rulers and seers has he covered." So evidently the seers couldn't see. I didn't study the origin of the word seer, but that's ironic. Anyway, it says that the people in Israel and by extension the whole world had a spirit of deep sleep, and their eyes have been closed. And then in verse 11, "And the vision of all is become to you as the words of a book that is sealed, which the men deliver to one that is learned." So you go to the biblical scholars, most of the people who write for Biblical Archaeology Review, etc. Saying, "Read this, and I pray you." And he said, "I cannot, for it is sealed." So the highly intelligent people say, "I can't understand it because it's sealed." "And the book is delivered to him that has not learned," the people who never went to, maybe graduated from high school, saying, "Read this, I pray you." And he saith, "I am not learned." So I don't have the education to know. Then dropping to verse 18, it says something. It gives hope. It gives hope for Israel and the world. It says, "And in that day shall the deaf hear the words of the book, and the blind shall see out of obscurity and out of darkness." That is beautiful. Now, if we can go, brethren, to chapter 35 now of Isaiah. And another wonderful prophecy. Isaiah chapter 35, verses 4 through 5. It says, and this deals with, now, and I'll show, this deals with the healing of the eyes of people at Christ's second coming. And I'll show you why I say that. Starting in verse 4, "Say to them that are fearful, of a fearful heart, be strong, fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance." The first time Christ came, he did not come with vengeance. He came, but not with vengeance. "Even God with a recompense, he will come and save you. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped." So that is specifically talking about Christ's second coming and what's going to happen. And then just to complete this beautiful poetic picture, which is going to literally happen also, in verse 6, "Then shall the lame man leap as a hart, and the tongue of the dumb sing. For in the wilderness shall waters break out, and streams in the desert." So brethren, now let's go, please, to chapter 42 of Isaiah. And start with verse 1. Now, it appears to me that this is speaking of, that God the Father is speaking of Christ, this special servant in this chapter. And it says, "Behold my servant, whom I uphold, mine elect, in whom my soul delights. I have put my spirit upon him. He shall bring forth judgment to the Gentiles." And some of these verses were actually shown in the New Testament to be fulfilled by Christ. So this is talking about Christ, the great servant. And then jumping to verse 7, it says this about Christ: "To open the blind eyes, to bring out the prisoners from the prison, and them that sit in darkness out of the prison house." Then going to verse 13, it says, "The Eternal shall go forth as a mighty man. He shall stir up jealousy like a man of war." When I was a little boy, there was a horse, a famous horse called Man of War. And they must have got his name from this verse. "He shall cry, yea, roar. He shall prevail against his enemies." And then going to verse 16, it says, "And I will bring the blind by the way that they knew not. I will lead them in paths that they have not known. I will make darkness light before them, and crooked things straight. These things will I do unto them, and not forsake." And then, okay, that was verse, yes, that was in verse 13. That is very beautiful. And then, finally, in verse 18, hear, you deaf, and look, you blind, that you may see. Christ is saying to mankind. Now, brethren, if we could go to Luke chapter 4, verses 14 through 21, which is a very famous scripture in the New Testament and gives us great understanding about Christ's first coming. And I believe, well, Mr. Richard Frankel, when I went to the feast in Jerusalem, and Israel, I should say, we went to Nazareth, and he had a, there was an ancient, there's a church, and next to it was the ruins of an ancient synagogue, which could have been, and they had excavated down, and there was a floor there, a pavement, and it's possible that we could have stood on the very floor of those of the, that had been, they had gone down to, of the synagogue where Christ spoke these words. And that must have been something to be there at that time. Luke chapter 4, and of course this was in Nazareth, where he had been brought up in Galilee. So Luke, starting with verse 14 of chapter 4 of Luke. And Jesus returned in the power and in the power of the Spirit into Galilee, and there went out a fame of him through all the region round about, and he taught in their synagogues, being glorified of all. And then in verse 16 it says, and he came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and as his custom was, he went into the synagogue. Evidently there was only one synagogue there, on the Sabbath day, and stood up for to read. And there was delivered to him the book of the prophet Isaiah. And when he had opened the book, he found the place where it was written. And here is the critical section. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives, and recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty them that are bruised, and to preach the acceptable year of the Lord. And then, in verse 20, he says, and he closed the book, and he gave it again to the minister, and sat down, and the eyes of all of them that were in the synagogue were fastened on him. And he began to say to them, so this must have been in a very electrifying moment, because they were, all their eyes were fixed on him after he, undoubtedly more powerful than any other human could ever have spoken that. They were staring at him, and he said, this day is this scripture fulfilled in your eyes. Now, it is very interesting, because he was basically quoting from Isaiah chapter 61, verses 1 through 2, but not completely. Now, first of all, I say not completely. If we go to Isaiah, back to Isaiah chapter 61, verses 1 through 2, it says, and this is what Christ was reading from the scroll that was there in the synagogue. The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to preach good tidings to the meek. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of the prison to them that are bound. And then in verse 2 it says, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord. And then it says, and notice this, and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all that mourn. Now there's two interesting things about this. The first thing is, Christ stopped reading and closed the book before mentioning that this was going to be the day of the vengeance of our God. He did not read that part of Isaiah 61. And the second thing is, he added something that wasn't there, that was not in the section he was reading from the scroll. And that is, he mentioned that the eyes of the blind that there would be the recovery of sight to the blind. So that was not in what he was reading in the scroll. But he added that, and then he said, "So." But we read it in other parts of Isaiah, and there are other places, but we read it in other sections of Isaiah, but not where he was reading, and yet he read it there. So he did fulfill Isaiah 61, but not fully. And not only did he not fulfill it as far as that he was not there at that time for vengeance, but that the eyes of the blind, the prophecy of the hearing, of the healing of blindness was not also totally fulfilled. And yet it was in type as a foretaste. So, brethren, let's go to the second part of the sermon is examples of Christ's healing of the physical blind during his 3.5-year ministry during his first coming. Now, when John the Baptist sent his disciples to Christ, because things weren't going exactly as he thought they would. I mean, he knew Christ was the Messiah and baptized him and said, "I'm not fit to unloose your sandals." So at that time, John the Baptist, the most righteous man, the most righteous man born of woman, except Christ, of course, that had been born of woman was there. And he prepared the way for Christ and pointed people to Christ, even when they were in parallel ministries. And yet, there came a time that John the Baptist didn't understand how things were going. And I'm speculating that just like the 12 disciples, maybe John the Baptist thought Christ was going to bring in the kingdom at that time also. I'm just speculating on that. But for some reason, he asked his disciples to go and ask Christ, who, like I said, he baptized earlier on and pointed people to. He asked him, "Are you the one we're looking for? Or do we seek another?" Now, Christ didn't brag and say, "Of course I am. Yes, I am." No, he didn't say that. Here's a summary, the answer that Christ gave to the disciples of John the Baptist and asked them to go and tell John the Baptist. And it's in Matthew chapter 11, verse 5. Matthew chapter 11, verse 5. This Christ said to those disciples of John the Baptist, "The blind receive their sight, and the lame walk. The lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear. The dead are raised up, and the poor have the gospel preached to them." So the very first example he gave of all of those examples of the miracles and the things he was doing as evidence that he was the true Messiah was that the blind received their sight. Now, in I have an Unger's Bible Dictionary, and it has a table in it, which is entitled Miracles of Our Lord. So it tries to list all of the specific miracles that Christ did. So I gleaned out of it one, two, three, four, five different examples of specific healings that Christ did of physically blind people during his ministry. The first one is in Matthew 9, verses 27 and 31. Through 31, I should say. So Matthew 9, verses 27 through 31. Now, this was the healing of two blind men. "And when Jesus departed thence, two blind men followed him, crying and saying, 'You, Son of David, have mercy on us.'" So they believed he was the Messiah. "And when he was come into the house, the blind men came to him, and Jesus said to him, 'Believe you that I am able to do this?' They said to him, 'Yes, Lord.' Then touched he their eyes, saying, 'According to your faith be it to you.' And their eyes were opened, and Jesus straightly charged them, saying, 'See that no man know it.' But they, when they were departed, spread abroad his fame in all that country." Christ must have had a struggle throughout his 3.5-year ministry, because he was a God of a pure love and mercy here in the flesh. And he saw all this suffering, and he wanted to just heal everybody. And yet he knew that when he healed people, it could speed up things and not fulfill the time plan that he had of 3.5 years for his ministry. So he must have had a struggle all the time. That's undoubtedly why he said, don't tell anybody about this, because it brought fame and attracted people maybe ahead of time. But he was in charge, and he knew what to do to control things. Then the next example is healing a blind and dumb demoniac. That was in Matthew 12:22. And this was the case of a man who was blind that Satan was afflicting. And then it says, then was brought to him one possessed of a devil or demon, blind and dumb, and he healed him, insomuch that the blind and dumb both spoke and saw. And then in verse 23 it says, and all the people were amazed and said, is not this the son of David? All of this was to help fulfill his first coming as the Messiah. The next one is the healing of a blind man at Bethsaida. And Mark 8, verses 22 through 26. Mark 8, verses 22 through 26 says, and he cometh to Bethsaida, and they bring a blind man to him, and besought him to touch him. And he took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the town. And when he had spit on his eyes and put his hands upon them, he asked him if he saw aught or anything. And he looked up and said, I see men as trees walking. It's interesting how in different instances Christ healed in different ways. After that, he put his hands again upon his eyes and made him look up, and he was restored and saw everything, every man clearly. So it became 20/20 vision. And he sent him away to his house, saying, neither go into the town nor tell it to any in the town. Again, he said, out of his love, he healed him. And he said, don't tell anybody. Okay, then the second to last one is the healing of blind Bartimaeus. And this was in or near Jericho, the city of Jericho. And this was near the end of his ministry on his journey, his last journey to Jerusalem. And if we can go there, it's in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, but if we can just go to Mark chapter 10. Mark chapter 10, verses 46 through 52, it says, and they came to Jericho, and he went out of Jericho with his disciples and a great number of people. Blind Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, sat by the highway side begging. And when he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out and say, Jesus, thou son of David, have mercy on me. And many charged him that he should hold his peace. But he cried out the more, a great deal, thou son of David, have mercy on me. It's interesting how many of them said, thou son of David, in addressing Christ before asking to be healed of blindness. And Jesus stood still and commanded him to be called. And they call the blind man, saying to him, be of good comfort, rise, he calls for you. And he, casting away his garment, rose and came to Jesus. And Jesus answered and said to him, what do you will that I should do to him? Of course, he knew, but he wanted him to say it. The blind man said to him, Lord, that I might receive my sight. And Jesus said to him, go your way. Your faith has made you whole. And immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus in the way. So that was another example. Now, the last example, that specific example that's listed, is the one that adds another dimension to examples of Christ healing the blind. And that is in John 9. John chapter 9. And this one, it specifically says, Christ healed a man who had been born blind. I don't believe any of the others actually say that they were born blind. And this dramatic healing, which I believe that is in the sermon that I referred to, mentioned by Mr. Chris Rowland, in that I believe he mentioned this, and I gleaned that to include this in the message from what he said. But this dramatic healing of this man who was born physically blind was an event. And by the way, the exact day that this was done is not known, but according to Mr. Alfred Edersheim, his best guess is that it was the day after the eighth day, after the seven-day Feast of Tabernacles and the eighth day, the day after. Some think it was on the eighth day, but anyway, that's not absolutely sure. But it was around that time. Anyway, Mr. Chris Rowland mentioned that this healing of a man born blind served as a foretaste of the future healing of all of us humanity who truly were born spiritually blind. And just mentioning a few things in verse 1, just to mention a few, read a few verses of that. Then he called John 9, and just read a few verses of this. And Jesus passed by, he saw a man which was blind from his birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And that was a common Pharisaical idea, that if anyone was blind, it was because there was sin, there had to be sin. And of course, this startled his disciples, because he answered in verse 3, neither has this man sinned nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him. So can you imagine that this man had, it doesn't say how old, but he was of age. He was an adult, because his parents said later on, when they asked them questions, they said to him, he's of age, ask him. So they didn't want to be put on the spot by the religious leaders. So he was an adult. And yet, he had been blind all that time so Christ could heal him, and that this would be in the scriptures for 2,000 years and beyond, this example, and be a foretaste of the future. Which makes you realize that anything that goes on in this life is so future compared to the great things God has planned for all of us. And then Christ said that. He answered, neither this man has sinned, in verse 3, like I said, nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him. And then verse 4, I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night comes when no man can work. And then he commanded that man, who didn't even know yet that he was Christ, or didn't even know who he was, he said to him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is by interpretation sent. So Christ sent him to the pool, which is called sent. He went his way therefore and washed and came seeing. And the neighbors, therefore, they knew who he was, and they were ecstatic. Of course, it was on the Sabbath, and those great religious leaders were angry that he had been healed on a Sabbath. So they certainly didn't have love, the love of God. And it says in verse 14, and it was the Sabbath day when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. So in this case, he moistened dirt, made clay, and put it on his eyes. So anyway, then he was interrogated. Therefore, said some of the Pharisees, this man is not of God, because he keeps not the Sabbath day. Others said, how can a man that is a sinner do such miracles? And there was division among them. And they say to the blind man, what do you say? He said, all I know is, what do you say that he has, about him who opened your eyes? And he said, he is a prophet. But the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind, and recite, until they called the parents. So they wouldn't really believe it until the parents came and witnessed, yes, this is our son. And then they asked him, is this your son? And he said, yes. And then in verse 21, but by what means and how he sees, we do not know. Or who opened his eyes, we do not know. He is of age, ask him. And these words spoke his parents because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had agreed already that if any man did confess that Christ was the Christ, he should be put out of the synagogue. And as Mr. Edersheim brought out about this, the fact that this man had been begging meant that his parents were so poor they couldn't support him. So being put out of the synagogue by the parents would have been a great fiery trial to them, of being basically shunned from society. They were already very poor. And then, in verse 25, after the Pharisees had asked the man who had been healed, he answered and said, whether he is a sinner or no, I do not know. One thing I know, that whereas I was blind, now I see. And I'm guessing that Mr. John Newton probably took that phrase and used it in his song Amazing Grace. And then they asked, they kept interrogating him. It was an inquisition, really. And they said, how could this man heal if we don't recognize him, we don't know him or know anything about him? And then the blind man, probably uneducated and everything, confounded them and said, that's amazing. You are supposed to be the teachers of Israel and you don't even know who this man is who healed me, which has never been done in all the history of humanity. So he confounded these great learned people, religious leaders. Then he found out that he was the Christ. Christ saw him again in the temple and he worshipped him and recognized him as the Messiah. So brethren, the church is composed of first fruits of those also, like I said, we, each of us has had our eyes healed. You know, the Apostle Paul was uniquely called, miraculously called, and for his calling, he was miraculously struck blind physically and then healed physically. Undoubtedly, to show all those who heard about him that Christ was going to spiritually heal him too and use him as an instrument in his hands. Just briefly mentioning a few things, brethren, real quickly. Romans 11 talks about that spiritual blindness, temporary blindness has happened to the descendants of physical Israel and physical Israel, the Jews and the rest of Israel. But God has opened spiritual vision to those in the church, including the Gentiles. So that's mentioned in Romans 11, 7. In 2 Corinthians 3, 13 through 6, it says, unlike Moses, who put a veil over his face so that the children of Israel could not look steadfastly at the end of what was passing, in verse 14 it says, their minds were blinded or hardened in the New King James. For until this day remains the same veil untaken away in the reading of the Old Testament, which veil is done away in Christ. So when we are called, the veil is lifted, and we are given spiritual vision. In 2 Corinthians 3, verse 16, it says, and this applies to all of us, when one turns to the Lord, the veil is taken away. And in 2 Corinthians 4:3, it says, the God of this world has blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine to them. And Paul said in 1 Thessalonians that you, brethren, are not in darkness. You are not blind. And then, of course, the famous prophecy or letter to the church of Laodicea in Revelation 3, he counseled those people to anoint your eyes with eye salve that you may see. Of course, talking about spiritual vision. So, God has given spiritual vision to those in His church. I just want to end in with a few minutes reading a few excerpts of letters that have come in recent times, due to either the good news or Beyond Today or booklets, etc., Bible study course, of people writing to the church. This is one January, February issue of the Good News. I'm writing this to convey my happiness since the day I discovered the good news. Here in Brazil, we have a lot of questions about the future of the world and the church. Your magazine contains blessed materials that helps us to understand the important points. Another one said, "Now I know that Jesus Christ is God, died for my sins, was resurrected, and went back to heaven. Now it is my duty to carry on and obey His laws." Another one in another issue, March, April, Good News. "Thank God for the good news. It has opened my eyes about the pagan holidays the world celebrates." And another one, "After reading through your website, I felt compelled to write and thank you for stirring up my spirit that has been sleeping over the last few years. I now understand what the Bible states. God's true church is small and will be kept small until His prophecies come to pass." And there are many here. There are many, many here. I will just read a couple more. "Thank you for the Bible study course. It has really opened my mind toward the things of God. The Bible has come alive since I started getting lessons from your church. May God bless your organization for your immense help in transforming the lives of many people." And I'll just read one more. "I have been getting the Good News magazine and have ordered and received several booklets. I have never understood more clearly than I do now when reading your information. The Bible has always been difficult for me to understand, and you focus on very important matters, always following the Bible verses. Now I feel as though I can understand more and become even closer to God. You are appreciated." And I have pages more, but I think that gets the message across. And that's only the tip of the iceberg. So, brethren, I just want to conclude by mentioning that there were great prophecies for thousands of years, over 2,500 years, that existed, maybe approaching 3,000 years, prophesying of a great time in the future when the eyes of mankind would be spiritually healed. And Christ came the first time to show His Messiahship and His love and to give just a foretaste of what's coming and what we just celebrated in the Feast of Tabernacles in the eighth day. And we are products of the work of the Christ Church has done. We are a small scale foretaste of what's coming for the whole world. And among all the brethren in the church for these 2,000 years, what a blessing that we as a small group of human beings, striving to be humble before God, striving to know that we can't do anything of ourselves and that God was merciful and lifted our blindness from us. And the ecstasy, we experience that first love when God lifted the scales off of our eyes. God is allowing us to be instruments to do the same thing and to let others go through that same process. So, brethren, let's really rejoice in God's plan and His love for all mankind when all people will have spiritual 20/20 vision and all the blindness and the terrible things we see on the news will be history. The earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea, because the spiritual blindness will be no more.